There's a lot of communication now that's like, hey, I just want to say stuff and barf it all over you, and I don't care how you perceive it or receive it. But effective communication is like, am I being heard? Am I being clear? Am I being concise?
You're listening to The Lowdown, a podcast recorded at Sigma Kappa National Headquarters by Alex Green and Sarah Goodwin. We'll focus on topics like health, wellness, fraternity and sorority community, higher education, and life skills that women need in all stages of their lives. We'll also feature stories from inspiring, empowering, and ambitious Sigma Kappas. Tune in every other week for a new episode to help drive your personal growth forward.
Welcome back to the Lowdown Podcast. I'm Alex.
And I'm Sarah.
And today we have Lisa Mitchell with us, who is the premier Indianapolis-based communications expert specializing in body language and nonverbal skill training, which I'm very excited about. Lisa loves coaching executives across many industries to help those leaders achieve their professional and personal goals. She also creates customized corporate training programs to help leadership teams communicate more effectively and drive greater results across their organizations. So welcome.
Hey, thank you. Thanks for having me.
And I love your bio, but I also like your background. Can you tell us a little bit about your body language training background?
Yeah. So I've always loved to try to figure out what makes us the weirdos that we are, because everybody is. Nobody gets a pass on that. And so body language was something professionally that's benefited me, and I kind of had dabbled in it, but personally, after kind of getting smacked around by some things I should have seen coming and didn't. Both, you know, in my business and in my personal relationships, I'm like, man, this sucks. And I don't want to do this again. And I'm also lazy. So I need like a hack of a skill set that I can find. I'm like, there's got to be a way to like see things coming or better understand what's happening around you. And so body language was it for me. I was introduced to it as an actual science, as a verified, studied, heavily researched science medium, which I loved, and I got engaged in that community and got educated by a human behavior research lab, which was super fun, out of Portland, Oregon, and did some work, got some training with Dr. Paul Ekman and his wife, who are like the father of microexpression science, like, which is an even smaller subset of nonverbal. And then I got introduced to the forensic interviewing community, which is like law enforcement, Homeland Security, FBI, CIA, loss prevention, asset protection people, like everyone who's trying to get to the truth in some way. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to know that too. So I got certified in forensic interviewing. So wow. I can interrogate. If there's anybody you need the truth from, I can interrogate, or non-confrontational interview, as we like to call it. But yeah, it's fun.
Wow. Mm-hmm. What have you done with the CIA and FBI?
I have just done, so I work with an organization that is, it's the International Association of Interviewers. So that's kind of a broad spectrum of law enforcement and private sector people who are doing investigations and doing interviewing work. So I have keynoted at their Elite Training Day event in 2017. So that was like me kind of getting to flip the script on them a little bit. And instead of them always looking and reading other people, mm-hmm. it was, how are you showing up in a room, and how is the way you're setting your personal temperature impacting the results that you're getting, and either helping you get to the truth or having it be a more difficult journey to the truth. And so that was kind of fun. That was a little unexpected. They don't get that a whole lot. And so that was a really fun way to get introduced into that community. And then most of my work so far has been with private sector. So it's been asset protection, loss prevention. But I am all about hostage negotiations right now. So that's my new obsession. And so I've connected with a couple of people in law enforcement that have, and FBI that have hostage negotiation experience. And I just want to see how that works, because it's just communication.
I was going to say, there's no body language, I would assume.
Well, but there's vocal power, vocal tonality, emotionality, getting to needs. It's like all this, it's all the same stuff.
Yeah.
But it's just, how do you manage that to get the results you want?
This doesn't seem like the lazy way out.
Well, right. Curiosity gets me every time. Yeah. Yeah.
But that's actually not what we're talking about today. Yeah. We're digging a little bit easier. We're just talking about how to stop being awkward in interviews.
Interviews are hard.
They are.
So think about it, right? Like whether you're interviewing someone else as, you know, the interviewer who's looking to get an outcome mm-hmm. or whether it's evaluating a candidate or uncovering a terrorist plot, right? Like it's still the same. If you're interviewing, you know that somebody wants something from you.
Yeah.
And so that's always going to be a position of, for me, awkward is my go-to. Mm-hmm. More so than nervous or anything else, I get awkward. So it's a heavy lift. Yeah. People are like, oh, I'm just interviewing. Well, no, like you're interviewing for something. Like mm-hmm. that does something mm-hmm. to you physiologically when you're the person someone's trying to get something out of.
Yeah.
There's never equal leverage in an interview, and you just feel it intrinsically.
I like that you say that. There's not like
equal
leverage, because I completely agree.
So how can we be more confident and poised when we go into an interview so we're not quite so awkward? Do you have any tips for our listeners?
Yeah, absolutely. This is where body language comes in really, really handy. And there's kind of this mental, physical combo that can really help settle you and make you appear more confident and have you just showing up in a room the way you want to. Like that's kind of my whole mission in life, is to help people show up as their most clued in and confident selves mm-hmm. in every room you walk into. Because there is a consequence in every room you're in, and there's an objective to every form of communication that you have, whether it's a text or a presentation or an interview. And really having that meeting of mindset and physical is a really powerful combination to help get you what you want. So I always say you have to set your internal GPS first, and your body language will follow. So if you just walk in, spur of the moment, unprepared, you haven't really set your internal GPS or your intentions, you're just going to get what you get. Like you're going to be led through an experience instead of leading an experience. And even as an interviewee, you have the option to show up as a leader in that situation.
Yeah.
And so a lot of it is really deciding. I have an exercise that I do with all my clients that are, you know, what are your three words? Before you show up on property, before you get out of your car, before you connect via Zoom call or whatever format you're in, determine, you know, if this person were to be asked, 60 seconds in, you know, what do you think about them? Somebody else asked them, what do you think about them? And they described you in three words. What three words would you hope that initial interaction with you would lead them to say? Mm-hmm. So in the case of an interview, I want to be seen as knowledgeable. I want to be seen as trustworthy. I want to be seen as likable. I want to be seen as engaged. You know, whatever qualities are going to benefit you, knowing ahead of time and zeroing in on three that you can just affirm to yourself, I am confident. I am knowledgeable. I am trustworthy. Boom, walk in the door. Mm-hmm. Your body like already knows, okay, this is the set of behaviors I need to display to help me get to that end game that you've already set for me.
Should you do research behind that, or is it just literally having it in your head? Or
there's a lot around setting intentions, and for me, my area of, you know, kind of proof of concept is like just knowing from my own experience of when I decide, and I mean, there's 100 different words you could use, or targets you could set, but for me, it's like, okay, what's gonna best serve me in this situation? What is the objective that I'm looking for? Mm-hmm. And that's really kind of the questions I ask myself before I even land on my three words is like, what do I want out of this?
Yeah.
Like, why am I putting my time and energy into this engagement right now? What am I hoping at the end to get? Sometimes it's a job. Sometimes it's a new relationship or a new connection or a new friendship. Sometimes it's information that I need from somebody. And each one of those end games gives me a different set of parameters to work with. So it's just knowing, What do I even want? Like just taking that moment to pause and be like, why am I doing this? Why am I in this room right now? Mm-hmm. Which you think you just like, duh, you know, but so often we don't. It just helps to really, really guide and set the tone for how you need to show up.
So speaking of intentions and like words or how you want to be described, I have also heard that you should do like a Superman pose or something before going into an interview. And I'm not going to lie, before like my phone interview with Sigma Kappa, I kind of did that for a little bit.
Yeah, no, I do. Like, so pretty much anytime before I go on stage, you will find me in my hotel room or in the bathroom like this for like
big
2 minutes.
X.
Yeah, big X. I call it a starfish it out. Like, take up as much space from fingertip to fingertip, toe to toe, and head. Yeah. Like, just grab all the space that you can and just hold it for a minute. And Amy Cuddy, actually, she's got an amazing TED Talk, and it's C-U-D-D-Y if anybody wants to look her up.
But, we'll link that in the show notes too.
Yeah, and it's Fake It Till You Become It was kind of her TED Talk title. And she, and in all fairness, there's been a lot of scrutiny around her particular, some of the particular outcomes of her research. And it's funny how, like, when scientists get famous, they get skewered by other scientists. So she's had a rough go of it, but her initial principles of the correlation between claiming space and feelings of confidence and relevancy are completely spot on. And there's other research by the University of British Columbia around how do we express victory. So think in your mind, like, what does somebody look like? What did Tiger Woods look like when he won the Masters? Like, big, taking up space, moving all around, right? What does somebody look like when they fall down a foot from the finish line?
They take up as little space as
they want to shrink and disappear, right? And the study was, you know, was challenging. Do we present confidence that way or victory that way because of what we've learned social norms-wise, what we've had modeled for us, or is it intrinsic? So they followed, long story short, they followed blind athletes across many different cultures in many different forums, and blind athletes who had never seen what victory and defeat look like responded the same way to victory or defeat. So it is like an intrinsic DNA thing. So anytime, especially in preparation for an interview or a presentation or something where maybe your nerves are in high gear, if you can just take a minute and breathe and get big, and like that outward expression tells your body intrinsically that you're okay, like you deserve to be there, that you're confident, that you're ready. So absolutely, using a power pose, using a position, maintaining that position while you're standing with your feet kind of slightly wider than your hips or your shoulders. And it's not like an obvious, you know, obnoxious pose, but it is something where you can kind of offset and just take up a little more space, and it keeps your body knowing like, okay, we're good. We're not small. We're not defeated. We're good.
When you do have that pose, say you're interviewing at Sigma Kappa Sorority, we're going through a lot of interviews right now for different positions. Can that ever come off too confident towards other women if you have some sort of, like I said, if you're trying to take up more space, can that ever come off as too confident?
You know, you can never really know exactly what the ego state of the person across from you is. And there are ways that definitely are perceived as more confrontational. Okay. So squaring up with somebody directly versus setting offset a little bit, like direct, you know, kind of head, shoulders, knees, and toes squared up, it can be perceived as more confrontational, more adversarial based on the lens that the person across from you is viewing you. It can also be seen as just highly engaged, right? So you can't control the lens that someone else is bringing in, but you can read. If you start reading cues, maybe they're uncomfortable or maybe they're, you know, feeling overpowered or trying to compensate and you know, maybe alpha dog you a little bit, right? Mm-hmm. Those are things you can read to say, okay, how can I adjust in real time? Maybe offset, maybe lean back, maybe take away some of that perceived confrontation.
Which we will go into in a second. Is there anything else that you can do before you even go into the interview to feel more confident about what you're about to go into?
Yeah, I think speaking confidence is important too. And part of nonverbal communication is actually a segment called vocal power, where it's not the content of your words per se, but it's how you deliver them. So just saying a positive statement, something that you can believe to be true, saying it, you know, and a tone with emotionality and that's robust, that you are like hearing yourself echoing back something that's true to you and something that's beneficial to you, is another great way to just like reaffirm and again, set your internal GPS that you know where you're headed and you know how you want to perform.
Yeah. What do you say? I feel like I don't know. Like, do you have one that you always say? Like, should you kind of have that same thing you always say?
Yeah. So for me, it's I am prepared and impactful. I like that. Because for me, my biggest, when I'm on stage or when I'm in front of a group, the biggest head trash that I battle is the, who am I to say this?
Yeah, like imposter syndrome.
Right. Yeah. Right. Absolutely. Imposter syndrome, head trash. It's one of those things. And I had one of the girls that I mentor got to go to a conference with me in Austin in the fall, and she was with me right before I went on, so she got to see the full. Like, I'm like, this is the real. Like, this is every time before I get, because the room was full of amazing, you know, professional, entrepreneurial, wildly successful women in all different stages of careers, a lot of whom I look up to and admire. And I'm like, who am I? Like, what am I doing? What value do I add? So it's like, you know, I'm knowledgeable, I'm impactful, I'm the right person to do this. Yeah. You know, someone's going to really benefit from what mm-hmm. I have to say. So it's like that kind of like, yeah. and things I have 1,000 sets of evidence to support me on already yeah. that I still just, it never stops. It's, wow. that head trash is a yeah. real,
and I love every, the word head trash.
Yeah. And every, I'll tell you, every executive that I work with, because a lot of my time is spent in executive coaching clients. It doesn't matter how successful they are, where they were educated, how many years of track record, how wealthy they are, how much, mm-hmm. doesn't matter. Everybody's got it.
So it's finding your head trash and then speaking kind of against it right. or the opposite of right. it.
Because it's not true.
Yeah.
yeah.
Like, it's not true. Anything that you're telling yourself is not true when it's in the head trash bucket, yeah. right? You got to just like... reaffirm it. And it's not enough just to say, oh, that's not true. Like, you need to speak truth over that. Like, for me, it's like overriding.
Yeah.
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 I had to think about that for a while. I need to figure out what my head trash is. That's what was going through my mind right now. So we are confident going in. We've done our pose. We're in a good space. So we're in the interview and we're feeling good about it, but we don't know how the interviewer is feeling. How can we look at them and adjust, like, how can we look at their body language and know how they're feeling about the interview?
Yeah, it's really hard to get out of your own head when you're in a situation where you feel like you're starting from less leverage, right?
Yeah.
And from an interview standpoint, it's like, oh, all about how you perform and how you sell yourself. But mm-hmm. if you don't take the time to look at what's happening on the other side of your face, you're missing key opportunities to show emotional intelligence, to make them comfortable, to meet them where they're at. Mm-hmm. Most people don't ever take into account the needs of the person interviewing them.
No.
And think about somebody in HR who's interviewed, I mean, even 10 interviews a day.
Yeah.
It's exhausting. Yeah. Like, it is so much mental energy to interview yeah. somebody. So if you can just adjust for a moment and, like, if there's somebody who – you know, you can build some rapport with, or like have it just a, hey, human, I'm a human too. Mm-hmm. And I know we're here for an interview, but let's just like have a moment of acknowledging, mm-hmm. like, I appreciate you taking the time to do this. Mm-hmm. You know, this is interesting as, yeah. You know, I really appreciate the energy it takes to interview,
yeah.
you know, just that small moment of like you knowing that there's someone else of value on the other side mm-hmm. of you. They don't get a lot of that.
No, I've never thought to do that.
Yeah. So that just that human acknowledgement of yeah. like, even if it's not related to the interview at all,
mm-hmm.
right? Just a comment on something or an observation about something or something that you appreciate, yeah. you know, oh, the process coming in today was, you know, thanks for the clear instructions. That was really helpful.
Oh, yeah.
Like, if you look hard enough, you're going to yeah. find something that you can affirm that person.
I feel like that yeah. would make you stand out a little bit too. Mm-hmm. Because exactly. they're going to be like, they're the one person that noticed that or mentioned yeah. that.
Yeah, and it's not like in a butt kisser, you know, insincere kind of way, but it's like if you can find a genuine, authentic way to acknowledge that person and the energy that they're putting into mm-hmm. spending time with you. And that's universally in any environment. Like, that's huge. And yeah. likability cannot be underrated.
Mm-hmm.
Like, likability is one of the key things, because especially in job interviews, they're not so much even interviewing your competency. They're like, do I want to see you in the hallway?
Yeah.
Like, are you yeah. going to fit in with our team? Are yeah. they going to yell at me for hiring you because you suck from a personality mm-hmm. standpoint? You know, like, it's not just you and the interviewer. It's like, what environment yeah. are they creating for themselves? So there's all these like unspoken little yeah. variables and components. If you're just looking to clue in and acknowledge and connect, you can kind of overcome those quickly.
Yeah. And that's yeah. at the very beginning, like setting up right. the conversation just really positive, I think, is
absolutely
is so big.
Yeah. Or, you know, if they ask a question, you know, I really appreciate the way you frame that question.
Yeah. Wow. While you're thinking of the answer, yeah. just to prolong
it that. It buys you time. It makes you look clued in. Yeah. Shows you're paying attention.
Yeah. Is there anything, like, if they're, I have no idea what it would be, so I'm just going to make up, leaning backwards or looking down or looking at their clock or things that you should be like, man, I lost, no, obviously, but yeah. like, well, they're just completely like lost right now, lost cause or.
Yeah, I think that there's definitely like there's a bunch of negative nonverbal cues, like if you're looking for warning signs. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that, like the most important thing you can do when you first walk into the room with that person is just do a quick baseline scan. So what's normal for this person? What's their posture like? What are they doing with their hands? What's their tone of voice? What's their eye, you know, how often do they blink, right? Like just a quick up, down scan of like, this is like snapshot normal as I know it for this person. Because positive or negative cues, you notice more readily when you have a baseline or a normal. So you're looking for something that is a marked variance, a change in behavior from what you have seen as normal. And again, in an interview, it's a very quick kind of like thin slice normal. I'm going to assume this is normal for you. I have no idea, right? But then if they're normal and they're open and they're asking questions and they're leaning in and they're engaged, then all of a sudden they kind of offset and lean back and get distracted and eye contact, percentage of eye contact changes, you know, like you can kind of tell, or if you hit a topic and they get, you know, really upright and lean in, or, you know, there's all sorts of things that you can notice, but the key is variance. One quick thing is if someone is like squared up with you or even sitting offset and then they shift so their feet and legs point towards an exit, they want to go. They're done. And that's true in any, not just interviews, but in any scenario. Our feet and legs are the most honest part of our body.
I just read that. I mentioned that to who were thinking of questions, and I was like, apparently if you point your feet a certain way, like that means something. And I was like, that's interesting. And I literally just said that to her like an hour before.
So feet and legs are historically the most honest part of our bodies. They normally point where we want to go, and we don't hardly ever think about them. So we don't regulate it. We're not strategic. Yeah. So you'll notice if you ever watch like true crime shows and they show the interrogation room videos, there's usually an interviewer sitting kind of diagonal or catty corner from the suspect. You can always see under the table, and there's almost always somebody in the back or to the side observing. And what a lot of times that observer is looking for is for variations or excitement, happy feet, right? Because when someone is lying to you and they think they're getting away with it, their feet and legs get really active. They bounce a lot. Like it's that's the only place, because we're controlling and we're maintaining in a very serious interrogation environment. You know, eye contact, how our tone of voice, what our hands are doing, how our posture is. We're very, very poised from the waist up. And then under the table, it's like a free fall. Right. So, or if somebody's really like engaged in answering questions, then all of a sudden you ask a question, and their feet towards point towards the door, you've hit an area of discomfort and they don't want to be there anymore. Why? Ask more questions, dig in.
Yeah.
Right. So it's all of this, like our bodies are usually, we're really conscious, especially in high stakes, high consequence environments like interviews. But what are you, what are your feet and legs doing, and what message are they sending? Because your interviewer is going to be decoding you, even if they don't know any of this stuff. There's just kind of this natural positive or negative read. And any cue you're giving that's a negative nonverbal, they'll decode as a demerit. Like they'll just pick up on, they may not know exactly why something felt different or why they just don't feel positive about you overall, but it's because their internal software is running the program in the background.
So interesting. I feel like, Sarah, did you... I think we were talking about earlier about if, so you're an expert on body language. Do you ever go into a situation, or, I mean, I don't want to say like you're lying to someone, but let's pretend you're going to lie to someone and you know all of this. Can you trick someone into believing something different because you know how your body is reacting to your head?
It can be weaponized for sure. Yeah. It can be manipulated. It can be weaponized. There's kind of an unofficial code of ethics that most people in this space that equip people with these tools will preface of, you know, use your powers for good instead of evil. You absolutely can manipulate people into feeling certain things about you, into making decisions maybe before they're ready to make decisions. There's all sorts of things you can do if you were to use this strategically in a negative way. And that's, it's kind of good to know that, because if someone is, you know, a sociopath or a narcissist or someone who maybe is either unaware of how they're using it or is using it specifically to hurt you, you know what to look for. So if your feelings start changing towards something and you're like, wait, like no evidence tells me I should feel more positively about this person, like what words have been used? How has it been framed? What's their body language been doing? You know, how have I maybe been manipulated in this experience?
I feel like that could be an entire podcast in itself and shouldn't go into the interview prep, but so interesting.
Seriously, What kind of body language should interviewees be doing or showing during an interview? Like, what are some basics that they should know?
Yeah, and I think it'll vary a little bit based on, you know, what the role is and what their key criteria for consideration is. But I think in any role, likability, again, is huge, right? So showing warmth, eye contact, gesturing naturally, engaging, leaning into close space where it's appropriate to show that you're really interested about something, gesturing to show you're really excited about something or you know, something was very detailed, like using illustrations to show that you're a good communicator is super helpful. Anything you can do to kind of visually step people through, whether it's like making a chopping motion with your hands, counting on your fingers, showing the scope of something, if you're really proud of something that was really big, like demonstrate that, get big, put your hands out a little bit, like not uncontrolled, like strategic illustrations are important because otherwise you look unhinged and twitchy. So, so you want to be really strategic about it, but use your body to illustrate, to show emotion, to, you know, really help build trust. So one of the ways that people will decide right away, thanks to kind of our lizard brain or our limbic brain, is, the odds that you'll harm or kill me. Right. So anytime someone walks into your space, into your awareness, your background software is assessing threat. Mm-hmm. Is this person a threat? And so by default, eye tracking studies show the thing we look at most often initially before anything else is people's hands. So hands are trust indicators.
Yeah.
And so if you can walk into an interview and not be carrying a bunch of junk and not be bogged down by folders or you know, bags or whatever, visible hands as you walk into somebody's space turns the alarm off. They can see not a threat, probably not going to kill me, right? Yeah. And something as simple as like visible hands, or if you're answering a question where honesty or truthfulness is or integrity is really important in your answer, keeping your hands visible on the table or around a coffee cup or using a pen to at least keep one hand on the table is a super kind of covert way to continue to say, you can trust me, you can trust me, you can trust me. So again, it's all running in the background, but everybody's brains are assessing trust in this way. So the more you can keep your hands visible, reaffirm trust at that kind of primal level, the more they can quit dealing with alarm bells and actually listen to what you're saying.
Mm-hmm. I know we've talked about this in past episodes, but RBF.
Yeah.
And I mean, maybe Sarah wants to ask something regarding
no. Resting rat face, as I have to say on TV. Yes.
Just how to make sure that if you do have that, being aware or trying to do something, like it's hard to sit there and smile. You can't just smile at everything. Yeah. That starts to look really creepy, I'm sure. I'm sure that's a bad thing. Don't smile constantly with showing your teeth. But
that would be weird.
What can you do if you know that you have this? Or, I mean, because sometimes it's you're just deep in thought, you're thinking, you're truly analyzing, but it does not come off that way sometimes.
Yeah, there's a couple of ways you can do it. So the first one is, again, awareness, right? When if you're somebody who, like, nothing incites a riot in me quicker than when somebody tells me to smile.
Right. Like, I don't want to.
Do you want punched? Like, I just can't. Stop. Like, do not ever. Never. Okay, for anyone listening, especially our male friends, do not ever tell a female to smile.
Or smile more. Or you're so much prettier when you smile.
Yes. Not any.
I'm just as pretty if I don't.
No. Right? So let's just caveat life rule right there. Just don't. But if you are someone who knows, like the first couple times I was on TV, I would see myself when the host was talking and I'm like, oh my gosh, I look like I hate him. Like, and I don't at all. Like, it wasn't properly expressing. That was just, like, I had a very unflattering default facial expression. And so for me, I know that. And it's practicing an alternative expression. So something, and the only way you can do it is to look in a mirror and feel what that feels like on your face. Yeah. So maybe it's, for me, it's just a subtle cheek lift. Like, I can feel, like, a slight turn up of my mouth lifts my cheeks, eyes a little bit wider, changes the entire experience of my default face. Yeah. So it's an active expression. Yes. Mm-hmm. Like nobody, and we're not going to do it here because it's too early in the day. But if you just let all your muscles go slack, which is like your true default expression, nobody looks good, right? So choosing an alternative expression isn't cheating. It's just using your face to your advantage. Mm-hmm. And that's really, it is really important because people, again, are always perceiving and decoding you. And if it's like, oh, she doesn't even want to be in the room with me, maybe that's not at all. Maybe I'm formulating my answer. So if you're in a situation like an interview, you know, what a great moment to build a little warmth and be like, I'm just going to warn you, sometimes when I'm thinking about details, I get a really unfortunate look on my face. And that does not mean I don't want to be here. Yeah. So I just want to make sure I'm giving you the most accurate answer possible.
Yeah.
So just make a joke, like warmth, right? Like that moment of joke, hey, I'm a human and you're a human too. And I know that you'll appreciate this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and that works male or female. Like guys might not get it as much, but the fact that you can just own self-awareness, right? Yeah. Emotional intelligence, sense of humor, likability, warmth, all of that. Anytime you can kind of goof on yourself, not like in a self-deprecating negative way, but anytime you can remind someone that you're a human and they are too.
And this is awkward for both of you.
Right. Yeah. So it's just call it out. Like if you're, we're all weirdos. Yeah.
Self-awareness.
We have a lot of Zoom interviews, especially the pre-interviews. So you can't see feet. We don't know if they're dancing, if they're which way they're facing.
Yeah. If they have like pajama bottoms on.
Which I always pretend they do. Let's be honest. You have a nice blouse and you have pajama bottoms. But what can they do? Because sometimes you can't even see hands.
Yeah.
So it's like, I mean, elbows up maybe, shoulders up.
Yeah, I think posture in that case, having an engaged kind of upper body where you are still kind of leaning in, you are still gesturing as if you're in the room with somebody, even on phone calls where you have no video. When you gesture, it changes the cadence and emotionality of your vocal tone and makes you so much more interesting to listen to. Like if I tied my hands behind my back, nobody would ever want to talk to me because my gestures, my hand motions inform so much about my pauses, my pacing, my emotionality.
She does do a lot of hand gestures.
I do.
She does
the pointing of the
fingers. It's great.
I feel like you all are getting ripped off on the podcast because you don't get to see all the magical illustrators I'm doing over here. But I still do them knowing you can't see them because it makes it more interesting for you to listen to me.
Is it something you've had to practice? Or do you just like generally talk with your hands
a lot? Talk with my hands. I'm much more intentional about how do I use them to illustrate? Mm-hmm. Because really the goal with all communication is understanding. Mm-hmm. Should be. There's a lot of communication now that's like, hey, I just want to say stuff and barf it all over you. And I don't care how you perceive it or receive it. But effective communication is like, am I being heard? Am I being clear? Am I being concise? Yeah. And so knowing that is there something I can count on my fingers or step somebody through a process or illustrate scope or magnitude that makes it not only more interesting because our brains are wired to look for movement. So if you're giving a speech, if you can do, like I have kind of this pattern that I do of steps and pauses mm-hmm. because people's brains like movement. And so if you know how to kind of choreograph movement to get people, it re-engages, re-sparks, and it helps them remember your information better. Mm-hmm. So there's a way to, and it really is like every presentation I give really is choreographed from a nonverbal, like I'll think about what am I going to use to illustrate? When should I move? How should I time my pauses? You know, how does it make it most interesting for somebody to, because I just want to be heard clearly. And so my job as a speaker, a presenter, an interviewee is to eliminate as many distractions and use as many tools as I can.
Wow, that's so great. I feel like I'm going to get off topic even saying this because we're on interviews. We keep talking about speaking and that's so great.
But it really correlates. Yeah. It's, you know, you are on stage when you're in an interview.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you should command it and you should practice it and rehearse it and choreograph it and prepare as much for an interview as you do to go stand up and give a presentation.
I totally agree.
Sarah's really good at that. I'm not. I'm very much a spur of the moment type of person. Yeah. And I think she's much more methodical and thoughtful in that way.
I'm just a processor. So I like to prepare.
Yeah. So like give me the question, answer right now. No, it's like,
think about like TED Talks, right? And I think there's advantages to preparing in both ways that you guys are naturally well suited for. TED Talks are 18 minutes. They're always amazing and it's not on accident. Like the average TED Talk has 200 hours of rehearsal.
Yeah.
200 hours for 18 minutes.
It's insane. I think we just talked to Alex Perry.
She just did TEDx over in Ohio. Yeah, I know. She's incredible.
Oh, my gosh.
She's that's your speaking coach.
And that was
like,
also...
She's my speaking... Like, she's incredible. Yeah, she is a master of her craft, and preparation is, like, 99% of it.
Yeah. And that was only a 9-minute TED Talk, she said. And she was doing it mm-hmm. every day, talking with her mentor and stuff every day.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy. And the talks that look most effortless in most conversations are the ones that have been rehearsed the most. Mm-hmm. And they can be conversational because they're so well prepared that stress and nervousness of remembering what comes next is just a non-issue.
But how do you prepare that way in an interview? You don't know what questions. You just come with stories or ideas, and then you talk through those? Yeah. Is that...
I think again, it's strategy. So you know every interview is going to ask about some sort of past experience, something difficult that you've had to overcome, you know, something aspirational, like where do you want to see yourself? What do you think the biggest opportunity is? There's going to be something, probably some personal story or family of origin story, maybe direct or indirect. Mm-hmm. So if you can just have those, like, it's, we call it the story toolbox. If you can just have your go-to stories in your story toolbox that you can pull out that you know you can recite with the right amount of emotionality and authenticity that hits the key points, and you can plug and play key objectives as you need to. But if you have the basic narrative, you can just substitute in whatever they're looking for.
Yeah.
But coming in like, oh, you mean I need to figure out a difficult time where I... No, like, you know that's going to be there in some way, shape, or form. Like, you need to have a story ready for that.
Mm-hmm. One thing we do that maybe, I don't know if all organizations do, is we do a lot of panel interviews. Mm-hmm. So 3 to 5 people that you're talking to, and obviously just because one person is asking the question, you're not just speaking to that person. You're definitely speaking to all of them. I find it's hard to sit there and look at 5 people at the same time. Yeah. So... any recommendations on how to go into a panel interview?
It is difficult to, like, give the appropriate individual eye contact. But what you can do, and whether you're in 5 people or in a room of 5,000, is you can kind of blanket with eye contact. So that's being kind of strategic, moving. And you can think of it like if you're in a room, you know, kind of going in a figure eight. So front left, back left, middle front, middle back. Right, front, right, back, and kind of just nod. And again, you're gesturing, you're nodding, you're moving, but you're blanketing the room so everyone feels seen. So in a panel discussion, a similar thing, right? You can kind of go, you don't have to go down the order, you know, don't go down the line and like stare at somebody, but you can bounce from, you know, the end on the left to the end on the right, look at the middle, you know, just kind of bounce. Not like bobblehead, but just natural connection. And a head nod as you make eye contact is a great way to be like, I see you.
Okay.
Or an eyebrow raise, right? Like recognition. Eyebrow raise is like the universal, hey, I know you. Even if you don't, if you eyebrow raise somebody, they almost will always mirror it back to you. Seems and then you both feel like you already know each other.
When I'm doing it right now, it feels unnatural. So I don't know
when
I use
this. But if you do
this,
it with like, a nod or a smile, like as you pass somebody and you just do eyebrow.
I'm gonna notice
see?
Now.
Yeah. You'll notice it all the time. People do it to you all the time. You don't, like, you just respond.
Yeah.
That'll be the thing that'll trip you out. It's like, you'll notice it and you'll be like, oh my God, that just happened on my face back and I didn't even know that person. Yeah, it's like the facial feedback hypothesis is the theory behind that, where, like, we will mirror the expressions that we see on somebody else's face.
Yeah.
And I love that because the intention is so pure. It's to create understanding. So if you ever see somebody... like there's micro expressions are great. If you learn them, they're a superpower. They're the things that flash on people's face before they choose their expression. So it's that true intense, like 1/10, 1/25 of a second flash. But if you see it and you don't always know immediately if it was contempt or anger or disgust or whatever, like flash it on your face and you'll feel exactly what it was.
But that's very quick.
It's
that's
super
like,
quick.
So you have to be
but
like
you
really...
can see it. You can see it if you're looking for it.
So do you feel it when you do it?
Oh, yeah. You know where I like laugh at myself all the time is when I'm using emojis on my phone to text on my face. I will feel it show up on my face. I'm like, what is wrong with me? Like, I'm sitting at the airport texting and I put like an expression on my face based on an emoji I type and I'm like, oh my God, I'm such a spaz.
Oh, that's
like if somebody was sitting here looking at me right now, they would think I was insane.
But really,
watching
the
airport
stuff.
Is kind of fun too. So
I'm airport like... creeper. My Twitter feed is fire when I'm sitting at the airport because I just can't not.
Oh, funny.
Yeah. But it shows up on your face, and you will notice it. You'll notice it more now. Like you'll feel, and it doesn't always fully express. Huh. But like if you do like the one-sided mouth raise, which is technically contempt, but like a half smile is what a lot of people use it for, an emoji. Like I swear you will feel that muscle activation on one side of your face. Watch. I can't wait for you to
now that I'm cognizant text me of all later. This, I'm yeah. gonna like be like super aware and be like, yep.
Yep, just felt it. Just felt it. Yep. Yeah.
So to kind of round out this episode, what would you say is the main takeaway that our listeners should have to feel more confident and effective in an interview?
Be strategic. Use your communication like you would any other tool and prepare for it accordingly. So set your intention. Use what you know works to make you more confident. So take up space. Use tools that you know are going to make your interviewer like you more. So rapport, likability, acknowledgement, you know, leaning in, being positive, keeping your hands visible. You have so many tools at your disposal, most of which you're probably already using, mm-hmm. but putting a little bit of intention and focus and planning around that can just elevate the entire experience and make you more successful with interviews.
Great. So just be intentional. Know your body, know your face.
Use your tools, right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Just by the default act of being a human, you already have this amazing skill set.
But even knowing your weaknesses, going back to the very beginning, and then being able to speak opposite of those is actually really important. So know what you're already doing, but also know what maybe you struggle with.
Right.
And then talking yourself out of that. I really wanted to touch on that again because that was so great.
Well, thank you so much for being on, Lisa. You have a couple of courses coming up.
I do. So I love content. So I'm always building stuff. So if you go to powerbodylanguage.com/course, there is a 10 video episode course that's completely self-paced around the people reading playbook. And it's specifically geared towards millennial women who are looking to be more effective in their careers. So that's available at any time. And then I also, this fall, will be having another virtual masterclass. So we have young professionals from all over call in. We get together live via video once a week and learn new communication skills to make us better at whatever we're pursuing.
So if you have an interview coming up, you might want to
right.
sign up for
and
this.
Then I do individual coaching as well and interview prep and things like that too. So, yep. Awesome. I want to be useful however I can.
Yeah. Love that. Well, thank you so much. We will have all of those linked on our show notes page at sigmakappa.org/podcast. But thanks again for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.